Good morning.
Good morning.
Appreciate the opportunity to give a lesson this morning. I want to talk about something that has been in the news probably more frequently this last year than in years past. It's a subject that is often controversial to many people and yet should not be controversial for Christians, and that is the topic of abortion. I've heard comments made from the pulpit about abortion, but I couldn't think of a time when I heard somebody give a lesson entirely devoted to that. And so what I wanted to do this morning is provide a little context to some of the things that we're seeing in the world today, in the United States as well as the state of Missouri, and then move into talking about what is the Bible, what does God have to say about abortion. And then we'll finish it up this morning as to what should a Christian's response and reaction be to that. So to begin with, I'd like to take you back 3 years ago to 2016 when the, if you want to call it, the pro-life movement was facing a very gathering storm for a number of reasons. Some examples. In California, pro-life pregnancy centers were forced to advertise abortion services or pay large fines that would oftentimes bankrupt pro-life centers. In the state of New York, Catholic nuns were told that they had to fund abortion services in their health care plans that they had formed or dissolve those health care operations. Nationally, pro-life doctors were pressured to refer patients for abortion services or risk losing their medical licensure and credentialing. Also in 2016, the political outlook was bleak. And to complicate matters, a historically conservative U.S. Supreme Court Justice, Antonin Scalia, passed away and left a vacancy that would be appointed by the incoming presidential candidate, either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was a woman who had a track record of pro-choice and affirmed it wholesale, and Donald Trump was a total wild card. We had never seen how he would stand in terms of supporting or being against abortion. So a lot of unknowns in 2016. Now, I don't want to get into too much, you know, conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat this morning. That's not my job or place here. But I will say that, you know, I don't agree with everything that our president believes or the way that he's conducted his life. But I will say that I am pleased with the fact that he has taken a stand to turn the tide on the murder of nearly 2 million babies born that could have been born each year in America. A couple weeks ago, on June the 5th, I got an email, as I normally do, as I work in healthcare, from the United States Department of Health and Human Services. The email was intended to serve as notification that the Department of Health and Human Services was terminating a contract between the FDA and Advanced Bioscience Resources Incorporated, as well as the contract with the University of California in San Francisco. The reason for termination of the contract was because of the way these institutions were improperly handling and, in some cases, profiting from the bodies of unborn children. I want to read you a quote from this email. "Promoting the dignity of human life from conception to natural death is one of the very top priorities of President Trump's administration. The audit and review helped to inform the policy process that led to the administration's decision to let the contract with the University of California, San Francisco expire and to discontinue intramural research conducted within the National Institutes of Health involving the use of human fetal tissue from elective abortions," end quote. I thought that was a very good thing. I'm pleased to see that some things are changing in favor of biblical truths about unborn children and how we as a society view the life and place value on that. In similar fashion, a number of states have recently passed what some call the heartbeat bills this year that prohibit abortions after a heartbeat can be detected by ultrasound, generally between 6 to 8 weeks, which is very early. Alabama has taken the most conservative stance, passing a bill that bans all abortions except for serious health risk to the mother or a lethal medical condition to the baby. And so oftentimes, as it comes down to as a legal matter, is how do you define a, quote, serious health risk to the mother? Is it physical? Is it emotional? Is it life-threatening? How do you interpret that definition? Here's what the governor had to say that day that she signed the bill. To the bill's many supporters, this legislation stands as a powerful testament to Alabama's deeply held belief that every life is precious and that every life is a gift from God. I thought that was a good comment. Closer to home, I've got a good friend that works up in Jefferson City, attends the Church of Christ up at River Valley Mill up on the north side of town. Has worked with the senator for many years and is heavily involved in a lot of health care bills. And they had a filibuster and spent a lot of time working on a bill that began a year and a half ago that was passed by both the House and the Senate and signed into effect May 24th of 2019. The bill was House Bill 126, called Missouri Stands for the Unborn Act, passed by supermajorities. The bill prohibits abortion in a non-medical emergency, again, the non-medical, past the detection of a baby's heartbeat, generally 6 to 8 weeks, and includes also a trigger mechanism in the bill that basically states if the United States Supreme Court ever overturns Roe versus Wade, that was back in the early 60s, that Missouri would enforce that withdrawal immediately and have that a ban as well. Governor Parson had this to say, quote, "By signing this bill today, we are sending a strong signal to the nation that in Missouri we stand for life, protect women's health, and advocate for the unborn. All life has value and is worth protecting," end quote. But not all bills this year have been aimed at protecting unborn children. The Reproductive Health Act was passed in New York this January on the anniversary of Roe versus Wade, and it legalized the abortion at any time during pregnancy up to and including the dilation of the mother's cervix. The chant that was heard outside of their courthouses and outside of their political offices was, "Free abortion on demand, we can do it, yes we can." And when Governor Cuomo signed the bill that night, he ordered that the World Trade Center be lit in pink in honor of that bill. The defenders of the bill assured that no woman would undergo late-term abortion unless something terrible and life-threatening was going to happen to her. To that response, my question to them would be, is there a medical situation that you can think of that would require killing a baby to save the mother's life? Possibly. I think that the chances are pretty low, especially if it's a late-term abortion. Just deliver the baby by C-section if necessary. C-sections are quicker and safer for the mother than ripping out a child piece by piece out of her womb. Central to all these bills, whether in favor or against abortion, is a feeble attempt by legislators and supporters, funders, and others to place a starting point and assign a value on a human life that does not even belong to them. It doesn't even belong to the mother. Life belongs to the Lord, and He is the one who decides when life begins and the value of each and every life that He creates. This morning, I'd like for us to consider abortion from a biblical perspective, because frankly, God does not care how a district court, appellate court, or even the Supreme Court make a ruling on when life begins or how much value it has, and neither should we. So the question is pretty simple. When does life begin? Because at that point, certain laws come into play, certain regulations about protecting or not protecting that life. So we have to answer the question, when does life begin? And when does God say it begins, more importantly? To answer that question, I want to turn to the book of Job and consider a passage there. Job is one of the earliest writers in the Old Testament. You may not think that because it's kind of in the middle of the Old Testament, but Job is a very, very old book, one of the oldest. I want to point out here that it is God alone who has sovereign rights over birth as well as death. Let's look at Job chapter 1, verse 18. This is after Satan had asked to have Job, and God allowed him to do that. And terrible things started happening. He lost his servants, he lost his animals. And we come to verse 17. While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The Chaldeans formed three bands, raided the camels, took them away, yes, and killed the servants with the edge of the sword. I alone have escaped to tell you." And while he was still speaking, another came also and said, "Your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they are dead, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Verse 20, "Then Job arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, and fell to the ground and worshipped. And he said, 'Naked I came from my mother's womb, naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.'" It is the Lord who gives life, and it is also the Lord who takes that life. And blessed be His name. That is His prerogative and not ours. Consider multiple women in the Old Testament. Genesis chapter 16, Abraham and Sarah. Sarah said to Abraham, "The Lord has restrained me from bearing. The Lord has closed my womb." It is the Lord who decides who will bear children and who will not. 1 Samuel chapter 1, Hannah. Hannah says, "The Lord has shut up my womb." But yet in Ruth chapter 4, verse 13, we hear Ruth say, "It is the Lord who opens my womb." God does some very special work in the womb of a mother. His hands form every child with great care and love. I'd like to read a few more passages from Job and Psalms, Jeremiah. And the point that I want to make is that there is life, and God calls it life when that child is still in the womb. It doesn't matter if it's in or out. It is still a child in God's eyes, and He is the one that fashioned it. Some other passages for consideration. Job chapter 31, verses 15. "Did not He who made me in the womb make them? Did not the same one fashion us in the womb?" Psalms 127, verse 3. "Behold, children are a gift or a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward." They are a gift from God. God gave us these children. An even stronger passage that we may turn to a little bit later. Psalm chapter 139. I appreciate Travis reading this for me this morning. But the verses that I'd like for you to reconsider are verses 13 and 14. "For you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows me very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. You saw, my eyes saw my substance, yet being unformed, and in your book they are all written, The days fashioned for me, when as yet there were none of them. Psalms 100, verse 3. Know that the Lord, He is God. It is He who has made us, and not we ourselves. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture. Psalms 22, verse 9. But you are He who took me out of the womb. The last one I'm going to look at is Jeremiah chapter 1 and verse 5. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you. I ordained you a prophet to the nations. The other passage I'm sure you're all very familiar with is the story of the birth of Jesus and John the Baptist. Elizabeth was pregnant for about 6 months when the angel of the Lord, when the Spirit of God came down and came to Mary, and she conceived and had Christ. And when the two women came together to meet, it very clearly calls it a baby in the womb. That's the same term that's used whenever we're talking about Moses in the Old Testament or even in the New Testament, talking about children who are of a young age. It's the same term. It's a baby. And that baby leapt in her womb. It had life. These passages, I believe, make it abundantly clear that life begins before birth. I think to that we can all agree. So at what point does God determine that a new life has begun? Is it 24 weeks, which is what many people would consider a viable life, that you could take it out of the womb at that time and that it could survive outside of the womb? There have already been cases where the earliest, I believe, is 21 weeks, where a child has been born, taken out by C-section, and is still alive today. I can't remember the year now, Time Magazine had an article. It was the first procedure performed in utero for correcting spina bifida. And there was a child that was 22 weeks old, and the surgeons were doing the repair work, and there was a small incision in this woman's abdomen and uterine wall. And toward the end of the procedure, as they were stitching this woman's uterus up, the child stuck his hand outside of the incision and held on to the surgeon's finger. Look it up. I believe Alaya, A-L-Y-A, was the young girl's name. She's still alive today, but it was the first procedure to correct spina bifida in utero. And to see that hand, see that, it was the entire arm reaching out and holding on to that surgeon's finger. It was a neat picture. It was voted by Time Magazine as the best picture of the year. Is it earlier than 24 weeks? Is it 20 weeks when the babies can be startled by noise outside of the womb? Is it 12 weeks when they can kick, make a fist, open their mouths, purse their lips? Is it 8 weeks when the essential organs are finishing formed and the heartbeat can be detected? Is it 8 to 10 days when implantation occurs in the uterine wall? Or is it at fertilization, often referred to as conception, when the sperm unites with the egg? I believe that the Bible and science support a conclusion that life begins at conception. That's my opinion. That's the moment that the DNA from a sperm cell fuses with the DNA of that of an egg. 23 chromosomes on one and 23 chromosomes on the other. And when they lock up, they fuse and the two become one. There's a lot of things that happen because of triggers from enzymes from the sperm cell as well as the egg, that once that happens, the rest of things shut down and it's all focused on that one new life. To me, I believe that's the point when life begins. Two things become one. What God has joined together, let no man separate. It also reminds me of the passage in Psalms where it says that He knit us together. Is there anything more intricate and delicate than knitting together 23 chromosomes with another 23 to get them to pair up and include that heavenly genetic DNA, that blueprint of God Himself? We are made in His image. And once that takes place, the code is there and replication begins almost immediately. One cell becomes two. Two cells become four. Four become eight, 16, 32. And all of a sudden, you've got an arm, a leg, a brain, a heart. All of that code is built in there. I can't prove it, but I wonder if it's the work of the Holy Spirit that joins those chromosomes together, glues them inextricably, and immediately a new eternal soul is made alive by God. At that instant, I think that an eternal soul is created that will never die. Now, how it lives its life, where it goes when it dies, to heaven or to hell, will be determined at a later date. But at that moment, I believe eternity is placed in that child. God takes such care with every single soul He creates. He makes each of us in His own image, James chapter 3, verses 9, and places eternity in our hearts. For someone or some judicial body or legislative body to think that they have the right to destroy that life is to play God. No person gets to decide or determine the value or the worth of another human being. Yet the Supreme Court in 1973, allowed for this very thing to happen in Roe versus Wade. It established that no state should make a law regulating abortion during the first 3 months of pregnancy except that they be done by a licensed physician. I want you to think about that logically and see if the logic holds up. What this means is that the mother of an unborn child is given the right to determine the value and the worth of that child. Think of it this way. If she does want the baby, it's considered a person. And it has legal rights if she wants to keep that person. 38 states today still have a fetal homicide law that if you were to kill a woman who was pregnant with a child, it would be considered, I think it's a class B, it's manslaughter. If she wants the baby, then it's considered a person, then it has legal rights. But yet, if she doesn't want the baby, it is not considered a person, and it is therefore legal to kill. So therefore, the life of the unborn child and its right to be protected by law are determined by the mother's desire. I've heard it said that the might of will is the right to kill. Our desires should not determine the value or the ability to create or take away life. That alone is God's. I realize this is a very difficult subject matter, but I did want to cover it. There's a few other things I'd like to cover today. You know, there are many reasons I think that abortion is wrong, but ultimately I believe it's wrong because it is an assault on the person-forming work of God in the womb. This is the place where God creates a person in His own image, and to attack this little person being completed by God is to attack God Himself. There have been a number of surveys conducted asking women why they had an abortion. Number one reason, been this way for many years, I wasn't ready. Number two, don't have enough money. Number three, I don't want to be a single parent. All of these responses have something in common. The birth of the child didn't satisfy the desire of either the mother or the father. Perhaps the root cause of abortion is a failure to be satisfied with God and a desire to be satisfied with oneself. I want to read James chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. James 4, 1 through 6. Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and you do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not ask because you ask amiss. You ask and do not receive because you ask amiss that you may spend it on your pleasures. Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you think that the Scripture says in vain, the Spirit who dwells in us yearns jealously, but He gives more grace? Therefore He says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. The issue of murder in this passage in James is rooted in unsatisfied desires. I could spend another hour examining all the desires and longings that an unplanned pregnancy would threaten. A pleased boyfriend or a husband or oneself. It could threaten education in college, perhaps. It could threaten financial solvency or a career. It could threaten your freedom from morning sickness, diapers, the terrible twos, the responsibilities that come with raising a child for 18 plus years. James says that they desire and they do not have, so they kill. The solution, though, is given in verse 7. Therefore, submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. A heart that is deeply submitted to God and respects His word and His work above selfish desires will find grace. Abortion abounds today because men and women are not fully submitted to their Creator, but instead have made self-enhancement their God and fallen prey to the ruler of this world and destroy anything that stands in the way of their pleasure. Finally, what should we do as Christians on the matter of abortion? The first thing that I think that we all need to do is, number one, as James chapter 4 says, is submit our own selves to God. Number two, I think that we need to pray for these women who have an unplanned pregnancy. Maybe they haven't made up their mind whether they should keep the child or they should have an abortion. I think as Christians we need to be praying for these women, and we also need to be praying for these unborn children. Number three, I think that we have an obligation and a responsibility to, as Psalms chapter 82 says, defend the poor, weak, and fatherless. Do justice to the afflicted and needy, and free them from the hand of the wicked. No person is more weak and vulnerable than a child that is still in a mother's womb. Number four, I think that we can support abortion alternatives. We can help out with crisis centers that help these women. There's adoption agencies all over that are looking to place adopted children into good families. You could adopt yourself. We have several brothers and sisters who have adopted children. If you don't want to adopt or that's not going to work out for you, maybe you can financially support someone who is adopting. It is not cheap to adopt a child. The process is long and it is expensive. Yet the process to abort a child can be free and fairly quick. I don't understand that. Lastly, we can speak the truth in love, which is what I'm attempting to do today. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 11 says, "And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them." I think abortion is a very sad, unfruitful work of darkness. Abortion is one of the great destroyers of peace because it is war against a child. Murder by the mother and father themselves. It's pitted mothers against their children and women against men. And it has portrayed the greatest gift, a child, as a competitor, an intrusion, and an inconvenience. Those are my thoughts this morning. Again, it's a difficult subject matter. You may or may not agree with me on everything that's in there. But I believe that life begins at conception, that God is at work at the very beginning. And it is His desire to see each and every one of us saved, to have a life where we can serve Him. Medical advancements now show, you know, malformations, deformities, genetic congenital diseases and things like that of unborn children. Sometimes it's gender. You look at the ratio of aborted children between women and young girls and young boys, and by far and away, more unborn women are aborted than unborn baby boys. There's a lot of things that science has done, and I think it's a terrible thing to abort a child because it doesn't have the characteristics or the traits that we would desire in the flesh. You never know. Think of the man that was paralyzed from his youth. And they asked the question of Jesus and his apostles, well, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born this way? And what was the response? Neither one. He was born this way to demonstrate the glory of God. It's a passionate subject. The people that are in favor of it strongly, stand up and do that in the name of women's rights, that it's their body, their right to choose. But I would firmly disagree and say it is not their body. It is God's. It is His life. He created it. He gives us life, and He can take it away. I'm sure there are some very difficult other circumstances that have to be handled with much care, consideration, and prayer. That I just, you make generalizations, but I'm sure there are lots of other situations where it takes a lot of soul searching. If we come in contact with those women, we need to pray with them. We need to help them understand and search the Scriptures. One thing that we all have in common today is that at one time we were all one cell. That became 2, 4, 8, and have turned into the people that we are today. We're thankful that God has given us life, that He's given us the choice and the ability to serve Him. This morning you've got the choice to make a deeper commitment to God and become one of His spiritual children as well. Be united with Him in the heavenly kingdom here on this earth, the church, in heaven and home with Him. There's nothing that would make our Father happier and nothing that would fulfill your life and give you more pleasure on this earth. If you need to be baptized and be placed into Christ and joined with Him, we invite you to do that this morning as we stand and sing.